Welcome to Let's Get Physical. The material presented on this show are for educational purposes only and are not to be used as a substitute for medical advice from your healthcare professional.
Hi, this is Dr. Lauren Chin, and thanks for joining us again this week. The last time I was here, we were talking about pain in the thoracic spine, that is, the part of the spine from the base of your neck to your lower back. And we discussed how to find the end of the thoracic spine, and it's roughly a hand's breadth above your waistline. And we talked about things that would cause pain in the thoracic spine, and we got a little short on time, so we didn't talk enough, I don't think, about what to do about that pain or how to try to prevent it. And I do want to touch on that today, and then just spend a few minutes on that, and then we'll start talking about neck pain today, because I know a lot of you out there have had or currently have neck pain. But as far as that thoracic spine is concerned, we kind of had to rush through that. I want you to remember that the vast majority of back pain, mid-back pain, from where your neck meets your shoulders to down to your flank where the kidneys are living, most of that pain that you get is going to be structural. That's going to be muscle strain. It's going to be disc degeneration, disc rupture, structural issues, physical issues. That's why we call that Let's Get Physical. But we don't want to overlook the possibility that there's referred pain, and we briefly touched on that. Structures that can cause referred pain in that area include the heart, obviously, and we talked about, let's take a second and talk about that. From a clinician's point of view, let's say that you go into your chiropractor and you're having pain right, between the shoulder blades. It's been getting worse, and your chiropractor says, let's look at you. If your chiropractor can reproduce that pain by moving you around, maybe he has you sitting on the exam table with your arms crossed and has you rotate your spine, side bend your spine, bend your neck, etc., and you can reproduce that pain, that's a good thing. If you can reproduce it, then you feel more reassured that it's mechanical. But what if you go in there and you tell him you've been having this pain, and he cannot reproduce that pain, can't make it better, can't make it worse, just can't seem to affect it. I would hope that the next thing he would do would be to ask you, are you having any other symptoms with it? Do you feel like you have pressure in your chest? Have you had shortness of breath? Is the pain worse with exertion? And that sort of thing. Because, you could be having a cardiac issue. You could be having pain referred from an aortic aneurysm. It could be a lot of different things, pancreas, gallbladder, etc. And if it's structural, if it's mechanical, we can treat that. And we treat you a couple times a week and give you some exercises and put some heat, put some cold, put some laser, whatever. But if we don't feel comfortable that it's physical, that it's mechanical, if we're wondering if this is cardiac, we don't want to sit on our hands or wait around and see if it goes away. That may be time for you to go to the emergency room. And I don't know about you, but sometimes, you call a doctor's office or you call a clinic, whatever, and you get this message that says, if this is a medical emergency, please hang up and call 911. Well, I've had some training over the years and a lot of clinical experience, and sometimes I think, even with me, it's hard to know, is this a medical emergency or not? But just remember, when in doubt, maybe it is an emergency. Don't sit around and see if it's going to go away. See someone, do something about it. Anyway, so let's assume that most of this pain is mechanical and that you're going to take the appropriate steps if signs indicate that it may not be mechanical. So let's say it's mechanical. What do we do about it? What started it in the first place? Okay, so we spend our first couple of shows here talking a fair amount about the intervertebral disc. Remember that? Go back a few weeks here. We talked about a marshmallow between the two crackers and how, that marshmallow, if you put pressure on it, the marshmallow gets shorter, but it gets fatter. If you push too hard, the marshmallow may actually rupture, blah, blah, blah. Well, this is true in the thoracic spine too, as we now know. And we talked a little bit about the history of MRI too, because in the dark ages, we were taught that those discs in the thoracic spine didn't herniate because of the ribs and the supportive ligaments that are buttressed, etc. But we know now that's wrong. So, all right, so some of this stuff is discogenic. What do we do? Let's look at a person once again from the side, standing upright in a swimsuit, and what do you see in terms of their spine? Well, if you look at the neck kind of dishes in from the back forward. That's called the cervical lordosis. Then at the shoulders, where the neck meets the back, the curve goes the other direction. It makes a gentle curve in the other direction. That's called the dorsal kyphosis. These are normal curves. You get down to the end of the thoracic spine into the upper part of the lumbar spine, and then the curve starts to go the other direction. So the cervical lordosis and the lumbar lordosis point one direction, and the thoracic or dorsal kyphosis goes the other direction. Now, in the lumbar spine, we said you have to preserve that curve. When you bend at the waist and the curve flattens out and starts to reverse, you're causing problems. Okay, so I harped on that long enough. I'm hoping that it sank in. With the thoracic spine, the opposite is true. With the thoracic spine, when you exaggerate that curve, you're causing problems. So if you are kneeling in your garden, putting your bulbs in, and you're hunched over so your back looks like a giant C shape, reverse C, you are exaggerating that dorsal kyphosis. You're putting pressure on those thoracic discs, and you know you're going to have problems. So when we say in the lumbar spine, preserve the curve, same is true with the thoracic spine. You want to try to preserve the curve. You don't necessarily need to reverse it, but you don't want to exaggerate it. And if you have to, temporarily and briefly, then you want to stand up frequently, stretch with those arms to the sky, or maybe put your hands on the small of your back and lean backwards and try to undo what you've done by that stooping and bending over in that way. Okay, so again, if we try to preserve our curves as best we can, keep them in their normal, neutral position, this is when your spine is happiest. Yes, you can bend forward on occasion if you're careful. Yes, you can bend backwards on occasion, frequently even, and that's fine. But when you have a prolonged flexion, when you are bent over for prolonged periods of time, this causes problems. So imagine you are a potter, and you throw a piece of clay on that wheel, and you're hunched over your wheel for God knows how long. You know, don't be surprised if you have neck pain, mid-back pain, low back pain, the whole shebang. So not that many of you maybe are sitting at a wheel, but a lot of you are probably sitting at desks, and it's the same story. Are you hunched over your computer? Are you hunched over your keyboard? How often are you pushing back from that keyboard and standing up? Quiz question, if you remember from previous weeks, we push back from that keyboard every 20 minutes. We stand, reach for the sky, get up on those tiptoes, or if you're able, you put your hands on the small of your back, you lean backwards, hold it for 10 to 15 seconds, two or three repetitions every 20 minutes can really prolong the health and the life of your spine. All right? Okay, so maybe enough of the thoracic spine. How are we doing on time, Truman? Yeah. Okay. So let's move up into the neck for just a moment. And you know, today I wanted to talk a little bit more about the neck, and then next time, if we can, get into headache, and because I know many people suffer with headaches, and headaches are a special area of interest for me because I suffered terribly with headaches for 50 years, and so I read every paper, I read every journal I could on headache, and I gathered a fair amount of information in the course of 5 decades, and I'd like to share some of that with you next time. But for today, we're going to talk about the neck. But the neck and the headaches, they are intimately, intricately involved. So much headache originates in the neck, and a lot of neck pain originates in the head. So but anyway, let's talk about the neck. What causes neck pain? Well, to be redundant, a lot of it comes from your discs. So you know, we just can't get away from that darn disc. And the reason is that between almost all of your vertebrae, you have those things, and they cause a lot of trouble. They don't mean to cause trouble, and they probably wouldn't cause trouble if we treated them with some respect, but we don't. We all commit terrible sins against our discs. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, you sit for too darn long, for one thing, and that just doesn't do them any good whatsoever. We engage in dangerous activities. Well, what would that be? Well, skiing, snowboarding, bicycle riding, all kinds of stuff. Just driving in a car, you know. If you've ever been in a car accident, you probably know what neck pain is like. I had I'm probably getting ahead of myself, but when you have a whiplash injury, you're sitting in your car, mind your own business, you're stopped at a light, and all of a sudden, somebody in a Ford Explorer rear-ends you in your little Toyota Prius. And your car shoots forward about 15 feet, and you know, you feel yourself being thrown around in the car a little bit, and you get out, and you look at your car, and there's not too much damage. It doesn't look that bad. And you feel okay. You may be a little bit shaken. But that night you go home and you start to have a headache and your neck starts to hurt. And the next day, your neck is kind of stiff and you go in to see your doctor and your doctor says you're okay. Neurologically, you're normal. But just to be on the safe side, we'll take an x-ray. And they get some x-rays and your x-rays look fine. And over the next, you know, 6 to 12 weeks, maybe 16 weeks, your neck pain gets better. Maybe you go to physical therapy or massage therapy. Maybe you see your chiropractor. A few months later, it feels better, you think. And part of the reason it feels better is that it's healing. And part of the reason it feels better is because you've learned to live with a level of discomfort that you didn't have before. But at any rate, you know, 2 years later, it's pretty much gone, or so you think. 5 years later, you develop some neck pain and maybe some tingling in your arm. You go to see the doctor. Doctor takes an x-ray. Now you have degenerative changes in your neck. You didn't have those before. And a doctor comes out with his x-ray and he looks at you and says, have you ever been in a car accident? And you say, oh yeah, but that's all over. That's gone. That went away. Well, I have news for you. It didn't go away. It just got turned down to simmer. And it simmered for 5 years and you ended up with precocious degeneration. So you look at that x-ray and you have disc narrowing and spurring at the levels of the fourth and fifth cervical vertebrae, C4-5. And you look at that, and the doctor says, well, you have some degeneration right here. Well, is that because I'm older now? I'm 45? Well, not really. I mean, the other segments are also 45, but you only have degeneration at one level. Why is that? Because when you get hit, those forces accumulate at certain spots. C4 and 5 are special. Especially vulnerable. And so, you know, we do these things to our spine that we just shouldn't be doing, and then we pay the price for it. And that's the, you know, that's living in the modern era. So at any rate, a lot of that pain comes from the discs. Some of it comes from the muscles. And why would you have muscle pain in a normal neck? And the answer is leverage. Well, it's more than just leverage. But let's talk about leverage for a minute. Let's pretend that you're holding a bowling ball, 10-pound bowling ball, which is about the weight of an average head. And people's heads vary from 10 to 16 pounds. When you think about it, 16 pounds on top of that little stem, you know, that little dinky stem called a neck, that's a lot of weight. That's a lot of weight. But it's okay. You were built to be able to do that, provided you are upright and your head is over your center of gravity. So the muscles of your neck are meant to help you balance your head, not to hold it upright. So if you are hunched over or leaning forward, imagine that person again who's putting in bulbs, or they're hunched over their wheel throwing that clay. Their head is way out in front of their body, isn't it? So, again, if you have that bowling ball and you're holding it right close to your body, it's not that big a deal. I can hold a 10-pound bowling ball. But what if I hold it out from my body a foot? It gets a lot heavier, doesn't it? And that's just what your head does. If you are not standing perfectly upright with your head over your shoulders, So your center of gravity runs right through your shoulders. You're straining your neck. You slouch and have that head come forward 1 inch, your head goes from 10 pounds to 15 or 20. Another inch, it goes from 20 to 25 or 30, etc. The weight that, because of the laws of physics, leverage, the weight increases so rapidly that you're just not built to do that. I mean, humans are what they call bipeds. That means you stand up in your hind legs and you walk around and balance that way. So we have these little dinky pencil necks because that's all we really need to function. Compare this to a horse. A horse is a quadruped. So he's on all fours. So his head is hanging way out there in front of him. And if you've ever looked at a horse's neck, it's a huge, huge muscular structure. Has to be to hold the head up at that long lever. So first thing, all right, so pain in the neck can come from the discs. It can come from the muscles. And it can come from the joints. A lot of different structures. And there are nerves, etc. We'll talk more about those. But let's talk a little bit more about this the muscles for a minute here. So if you ever would like to run a cruel experiment, this would never be allowed legally, but sneak up on a baby. Baby sitting in the room, sitting on the floor, happily playing by itself, and you come up behind it and clap your hands together, and what do you see? That baby comes right off the floor, shoulders come right up around his ears, and about 10 seconds later starts to cry. Well, what's the point of that experiment? The point is, when you are startled, you see the shoulders come up, and that's what we are hardwired for our stress reaction to manifest itself in those shoulders. If you are walking down a dark street and somebody jumps out of the alley with a knife, your muscles tense immediately and your blood is shunted away from your intestines and shunted to your muscles. The muscles in your upper trapezius, those are the muscles that brought the baby's shoulders up. The upper trapezius and your muscles, your fight or flight reflex takes over and you run like crazy. And you run and run and run, and then adrenaline helps you to outrun your assailant. And you can hear his footsteps falling far behind. And you keep running until you know you're safe. And then you stop running and you catch your breath. Maybe you're out in front of the police station. You catch your breath and then you look around. He's long gone. And suddenly you just feel totally drained. And you're limp, you're loose, you're relaxed. So that fight or flight thing helped you to survive. Well, what happens if you are at work and your boss comes in, chews you out for no good reason, and then marches off? Now what's your upper trapezius doing? What are those muscles in those shoulders doing? They're tight and they stay tight. Your adrenaline was pumping. It's still pumping. It's tailing off very slowly because you have no way to burn it off. You can't, you know, lash back at your boss. You can't just leave the office and run for 5 miles. So that adrenaline reaction takes a long time to tail off. And in the meantime, your upper traps are tight, your shoulders are up around your ears. And this is one reason people come into the office all the time and they say, "Doc, I carry all my tension right here in my shoulders." And they point to the spot where the neck meets the upper back, that upper trapezius at what they call the cervical dorsal junction. Yes, we all carry our tension right there. That's where you get that expression. That guy gives me a pain in the neck. It's based in reality. There's another expression, you know, that guy gives me a pain in the, well, that happens too because tension is stored in the gluteal muscles as well. They're fight or flight muscles. So muscles can cause pain, maladaptation to modern life and the stresses of life and the inability to blow off steam and excessive adrenaline can cause these muscle problems, trauma from sports injuries and car accidents can cause this stuff too. So we have to treat what we can. We need to try to prevent what we can. And prevention, most of these problems, well, you know, these days there are a lot of people walking around with chronic pain from car accidents. And if, you know, one of my patients was a liaison between the National Traffic Safety Board and insurance companies. And his job was to go around to junkyards and auto repair places and catalog the types of damage that was seen in car collisions and correlate that with injuries sustained by the occupants. And his conclusions are very simple. And his conclusions are, or were, buy the newest, biggest car that you can afford. And the reason for that is very simple. Again, it's the laws of physics. If you're in that Prius and you get hit by a Ford Explorer, the law in accident reconstruction and injury is, quote, he with the most lug nuts wins. And that's just, you know, physics and inertia. Now, conversely, let's say that you're sitting in a Suburban. Actually, I'll tell you a true story. A friend of mine was sitting in his, I think it was a 75 Cadillac, and he was sitting at a light, and he was lost in thought, but then he thought he felt the Cadillac move. He wasn't sure, but he thought he was. And he looked in his rearview mirror, and there was a woman driving a small Volkswagen Bug behind him, and she looked awfully close to his bumper. So he pulled over and kind of ended up towing her with him, and it turns out that she had rear-ended him and kind of welded her car to his Cadillac. He barely felt it. Her car was destroyed. And so guess who's going to get hurt when there is a differential in mass like that? You know, so, and the reason, so that's why you want the biggest car you can afford and morally drive without, you know, having to suffer the guilt of, you know, your carbon footprint, et cetera. But the newest, you want the newest car that you can afford simply because every year they come up with better ways to do things. In the old days, when big Detroit steel was a thing, the cars were pretty big, but they were rigid. And if you're sitting in a light in your Chevelle and you get hit by a Malibu, you know, the cars are both big and they're both heavy, but the impact is transmitted directly to the occupants. So your car goes flying forward and your head snaps backwards and you get out and look at your car. There's a scratch on the bumper, but no big deal. You can, you know, replace that or buff it out. But you go home and over the next couple of weeks, you just get worse and worse and worse. And that doesn't happen as much anymore because automakers have crumple zones in the cars now. So now when you get hit, your car folds up like an accordion and it absorbs the force that used to be transmitted to the driver and the occupants. So, and all of the airbags and all the newer improvements, you know, bigger, newer is better. Okay, so where were we? We were talking about the laws of physics and how they pertain to your neck. Leverage is one. Momentum is one. So what do we do about the neck? And we control what we can. So we, you know, we drive as safely as we can. We drive defensively. And before we leave the subject of car collisions, when you do stop at a light, you want to be leaning back with your head against the head restraint. Keep your eye in the mirror and be alert. So if you see someone who's not paying attention and they're going to hit you, you brace yourself. You brace yourself against the wheel. You brace yourself against the floorboard. Your head is all the way back against the head restraint so that when you are hit, your head has nowhere to travel. It's already restrained. That's why they call it a head restraint. It's not a head rest. It's a head restraint. Conversely, if you're not paying attention, you're leaning forward, you're looking, you know, fiddling with your radio, and you get hit from behind, your head and neck have so far to travel that the injuries are going to be much more significant. And so we don't want to do that. When you say drive defensively, it means protect yourself. People used to come in and say, well, I got hit, but I didn't see it coming, so I was totally relaxed and I'll be fine. That's exactly wrong. You want those muscles to brace and protect you because the muscles heal well. But if the muscles are not engaged, those forces go into the ligaments and the joints, and those things don't heal. We're the hoot. Okay. All right. So how are we doing on time, Jim? 4 minutes left? Oh, man, we're almost out of time already. I haven't hardly got started here. Okay, so with the neck, this is a lot to talk about. But with the neck, points to remember. Number one, preserve your curve. Just like with the low back, preserve the curve. If, you know, this is interesting. if you go to a high school sometime and watch the kids who are taking a test, what you will see is that their noses are about 3 inches from their paper. I'm not kidding. They never sit all the way back and sit upright and take the test. And the harder they concentrate, the closer the nose gets to the paper. Well, fortunately for them, they're kids, and their tissues are still fairly supple, and you know they can recover from a one-hour test. But you look at anybody on a cell phone these days, what do you see? Are they sitting up perfectly upright with the phone in front of them? No. The phone is down around the chest. The neck is in full flexion. The chin is practically touching the chest. And they are like this. Now, I shouldn't say it's not just kids. I mean, it's everybody. Your neck can't tolerate prolonged flexion like that. It just wears things out. It increases the pressure in those discs so that they're going to wear precociously. They're going to age quickly. They're going to age precociously. You're going to stress those things. The pressure inside goes up. The pressure is not where it belongs. And then the slightest little thing and boom, you start to have disc problems. And before you even manifest a full-blown disc syndrome, you have all this neck pain. Again, the muscles are built for you to be a biped. That means you're upright, walking with your eyes out on the horizon, scanning for prey or predators, not looking down at your phone. We weren't built to do that. Dogs and horses were built to do that. You're not a quadruped. You're a biped. Stand up. Keep your head up. Keep looking. You know, I had a patient one time. I had a patient one time. She, nice lady in her mid-60s, still working as a flight attendant. She had neck pain. She had mid-back pain. And she had low back pain. And gosh, I treated her and I treated her. And I taught her what to do. And I thought, you know, well, sometimes she has to work, put stuff in the overhead compartments, and sometimes she had to lift people's carry-on for them. And I kept writing this stuff off as occupational. And then one time I was on the ferry, and as soon as I get on it, back before the pandemic and you could walk in ferry, I always park my car, get out and go up and walk laps around the ferry. So I put in park, I got out, and there she was in her little sports car, mistake number one. And I got closer, and she was reading the paper. She had the newspaper, the Beachcomber, in fact, spread out on the passenger seat of her little sports car, and she was hunched all the way over with her nose into that paper. And I didn't say anything. I mean, what's the point? I went upstairs. I walked my laps. I came back down when we got to the dock, and she was still in that same position. And I thought to myself, well, you know what I thought to myself. But anyway, so your posture is crucial. And if you don't, I mean, some things we can control. You get hit from behind by a semi, you know, that's one of those things. But looking down for hours at your phone, lying on your back with two pillows under your head so your neck is in flexion, gardening for hours on end without a break, these are the things that we can control and we should control, because they can help not only our pain at the time, but they can slow down the aging process, which is inevitable to some degree. You can speed it up easily, but not so easy to slow it down. And with that, I bid you farewell. Good luck and good health.